meeting with you was at the Pastor Ramirez at his home in Chapel Hill, May 2nd, 87. So you can start with the questions. The letter is simply a call for files, people's files, and if you have any files, just go back to Tony.
Sure. Just one second, Tom.
All right.
Hello. Because I have an office upstairs. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is great. Great point.
Now, you don't have to be confined to those questions.
Yeah. Well, come here a second with me.
All right.
In the non-oral part of it.
All right, I'll put it back on again. Those are very interesting citations you received up in. That's a very different question.
Okay, well, then I should read natural into it. And then, are you balancing this? Is it all ready?
Yes, we're on now.
So my name is Fausto Ramirez, in the Department of Chemistry, full professor. I came to Stony Brook in 1969. I was born in 1923. Okay. Yeah, I was born June 15, 1923 in Zuleta, Cuba.
Okay.
And I studied at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, receiving the Bachelor of Science in Chemistry in 1946, the Master in 47, and the PhD in Organic Chemistry in 49, all from the University of Michigan. From the University of Michigan, I moved to the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, where I spent a year as postdoctoral fellow in medicinal chemistry. At that point, Columbia University invited me to join the faculty as instructor in 1950 to 53. I became an assistant professor without tenure at Columbia from 53 to 58. I did not receive tenure at Columbia and was then appointed associate professor at the Illinois Institute of Technology in Chicago, where I spent the year 58 to 59. I had done some research at Brookhaven National Laboratory while I was at Columbia. And I became friendly with a gentleman called Simon Freed,
who was a very
excellent scientist.
I know him.
And then in person himself. We became fairly close friends, and I assumed that it was he or one of his friends who recommended me to Francis Barnum.
Who was then chairman of the Department of Chemistry.
Who was chairman of the Department of Chemistry and had been appointed in 1958 to the chairmanship. In addition to that, Alfred Wolf, who had been a graduate student at Columbia University, who is now chairman of the Department of Chemistry at Brookhaven, knew me very well because I served in his PhD committee.
I see.
So through Simon Freed and Al Wolf, I presume Francis Barnum heard of me and offered me a position in the Department of Chemistry. I answered many of these questions.
At what rank did you come?
I came as full professor,
okay.
With tenure, yes. This was in 1959, so since I was born in 1923, you can see that one of the incentives for my moving was obtaining full professorship at a relatively young age, having spent only 1 year as an associate professor at IIT. Now, specifically, when I arrived at Oyster Bay, which was in the summer of 1959, we did not have a Department of Chemistry. We were in temporary quarters in the starting field. Is this recording? I should have said we had a Kentuckian Department of Chemistry, but we did not have a chemistry building in the summer of 1969. We moved into prefabricated concert halls, I believe they were called, in the core state. Okay, I remember very clearly that in September 21st of 1959, we had a so-called department meeting. It consisted of four people: Barnett, full professor, myself, full professor, just arrived, George Silver, who was, I believe, assistant professor without tenure, and Barry Gordon, who was assistant professor. So this was the first departmental meeting in track and field. Now, I held the first class in organic chemistry on September the 22nd, and the first laboratory in organic chemistry on Friday the 7th of 23rd at 12:30. And I mention that because it illustrates the improvisation that was being carried out at that point. In other words, we had absolutely no plans whatsoever. In fact, we had this pro forma departmental meeting, and we had to set up a class schedule. So from the meeting, we proceed directly to the first lecture and the first laboratory. That illustrates the improvisational character of the other day.
Yeah.
Which I thought would be interesting to put on the record.
Right, yes.
On the other hand, there is a feature here which is unique in that I brought with me one postdoctoral student, an Indian called Dr. Desai. So this man had joined me at IIT, and he agreed to move with me. Now Desai and his some friends, some Indian friends from Chicago, drove directly to Oyster Bay, carrying in his car the first chemical equipment in the Department of Organic Chemistry at Stanley Boulevard at Oyster Bay, because I got permission from the Petroleum Research Fund, who had given me a grant, and from Illinois Institute of Technology, which is very agreeable to that, surprisingly, to let me transfer some of the equipment that I had just bought when I moved to IIT the previous year.
Now, your research even then was in the phosphorus?
Yes, I was doing research. I had made a discovery at my last years at Columbia, which I am sure if I had made 3 years before, it would have given me tenure at Columbia. It was a matter of how science progressed. The breakthrough were dramatic enough, but not proven enough for Colombia to consider me of the stature of Kenya. It's a matter of reproducibility. My discovery proved to be highly reproducible, but Colombia was very careful in providing a tenure line to a young man who claimed he had made a discovery, had two or three papers on it, didn't have enough time to make that stick. On the other hand, by the time I left IIT, it became evident that this discovery was going to affect the future of phosphorus chemistry, which is what culminated in the latest
award
that I gave to you in 69. So you see, the way that science works, 8 or 9 years is not that much. So we're talking to you about the period of this discovery being evolving in 1960. So that had attracted the attention of this Indian postdoc who had read the papers, joined me, and wanted to continue it. At the same time, a Japanese, Dr. Yamanaka, had also read my work and had applied for a postdoctoral fellowship. I accepted him, and he appeared, he dressed the day of September the 28th, which is only 6 days after the first lecture. I thought this is rather intriguing because very few situations that I have come across in academic can be traced so quickly in terms of initiation of lectures, appearance of two postdoctors who did not know the kind of setup they would be finding. When they arrived, I'm sure they were surprised. I gave them options. I said, well, you applied to me at IIT. Your country pay, they have their own fellowship. If you are not satisfied here, you can spend a few months, enjoy yourself, and come back. However, as you will see in a minute, and this is an interesting bit that I would like to put into the record, because it is very telling and amusing. Yamanaka, for example, was able to make another discovery within 2 months being there that was submitted to the Journal of Organic Chemistry as the first scientific publication from AUSD, from the State University of Connecticut, which I will show you in a minute. So you see that it was a rather, I wouldn't say hectic, but it was a very, well, hectic is the word. I mean, there were lectures being set up, planning for the new building with Bonner, and these two postdocs, so we were creating a scientific atmosphere at the same time that we were...
You were really off and running, right?
Off and running, that's the word for it. I like to show the makeshift character of this operation. I found a list, which I had saved, of the equipment that I told Bonner was absolutely essential to get started. And it was a refrigerator, an ice-making machine, and a box to store dry ice. Now, this is either amusing or ridiculous, depending on how you visualize the state of science in 1987. But a Department of Chemistry that starts with a refrigerator and an ice-making machine as an emergency situation, it's a very primitive operation.
Well, that's somewhat like the stories about physicists starting with string and sealing wax and other things.
Absolutely. Turn it up for a second, because I need a doctor.
Let's put it on the record. The department gave you
the results of this beginning. Upon my return, the department gave me They collected three volumes of the collected work that I published during my entire career through 1985.
That's
There are 270 papers here. Of this 270 paper, when I arrived at Stony Brook, I had published 31 pages. In other words, when I arrived at Stony Brook as a professor, I had published 31 research papers. Now, paper number 32 was my first paper from the State University of New York at Stony Brook. And from then on, I produced the difference between 270 and 32. Now, I'd like to mention only number one paper, because the name of Yamanaka, which is the Japanese postdoctor, who had arrived on September the 28th, appeared there. And there's a rather interesting story about that paper. When he arrived, and he said, "Well, now, this is very interesting. I read your previous work in Stockbridge, which is what brought me here, while you were finishing at Columbia. But I didn't have time to publish anything from IIT. I was there only 9-8 months. And I thought that you had a respectable operation at Columbia. And now I appear here, and it is very, in the equipment business, very intelligent Japanese." I said, "Never mind the equipment, I have an idea for you. See if you can carry out with the equipment that we have here. And if you do, I promise that you will have a paper in a month. A communication to the editor, significant breakthrough. This is just like a bear. All right, just to keep the postdoc going here." The idea worked. And I found myself with a very interesting result. There are no institutions from which to publish it. Because there was, when I went and asked Donner, what is the name that I should put? This was October of 1969. Donner said, "Well, we don't have an official name. You go to the office of..." But it's been Olson, wasn't it?
Yes, right.
Okay. And you ask for the official name. This is going to be the first paper from the State University of New York. I think it's the first scientific paper from the State University of New York. Here it is. This is my paper number 42. You talking about that? I said, let's see the name here, Yamanaka. Now, there's a third name here of a man who was never in Österberg, a German called Bastendorf. He had been at Columbia University, and he had tried to run this reaction and failed. It was just the last month that I worked there. And this is the idea that the Japanese effectuated. Successful.
I see.
So I felt morally obligated because this man had
worked
on it. These are incidental bits to how, you know,
a certain amount of ethics involved.
Ethics involved, yes.
Yeah.
A man worked fail because he didn't use the proper technique. I did it with the Japanese myself because I was in a small institution at Columbia. It's a huge institution. He would see me once a week, maybe. Here we did it ourselves. It worked. Now, the interesting part of this is I submitted this communication to the editor of the Journal of Organic Chemistry on October the 30th of 1969. Now, the first lecture there was September of 1969. He was immediately accepted. It was a very important discovery, and it created a new field in Southwest chemistry. But look at his contributions from the Department of Chemistry of the State University of New York College of Long Island in Oyster Bay. That was the title that OPA called me to use as the only thing that we could put. Now, you know much more than I do about the subsequent history, so you could appreciate why that appeared there. I needed an official title. There was a series of telephoning, I remember, between Albany and Alton's office in connection with his name. And I wasn't that interested in the history of the place. I was in a hurry. Now I'm much more interested. So I said to Dean Alton, whatever you said, it's all right with me. I don't care. Just give me a name so that we can put it in. So Albany said, no, but this will never be the first paper from the State University of New York since we have a college of forestry.
Yes.
And there is a man there called Michael Strutt, who publishes a lot. So it turned out that the college of forestry was not really a unit of the State University of New York.
Yes, it was after 48. It was, up to that time, it was handled by the department, the education department.
Okay. Now you put your contribution in here, all right?
Yes. The New State University of New York was established in 48 by legislation sponsored by Dewey. And what they did was to break out the operating functions of the commissioner, the associate commissioner for higher education. They took them away from him and placed them under a separate board of trustees with its own executive officer. And forestry was one of them. Alfred's ceramics was another. And the contract colleges at Cornell were all taken and sponsored.
As part of the State University of New York.
State University of New York.
Which is not the same as the University of the State of New York.
Definitely not.
Oh, right.
Good. You've got the distinctions there.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine.
So now, therefore, I said, well, we should, since there is precedent, we should follow the format that Michael Strutt, whose work I knew very well. He was a very well-known physical chemist. Well-known physical chemist at that time. And a friend of mine, too. We like to follow the format. Mm-hmm. So I would like to say, contribution from the chemist. But at that point, there was no connection. So they said, well, this is the College of on Long Island. Mm-hmm. On the State University of New York. There is no Stony Brook in the picture here.
That's right.
Where's the bay? Okay, enough of that. That shows the appearance of some work on October 30th of 1969, having started the lecturing on September of 69.
That's fast work.
That's fast work. And it's fascinating historical, historical convergence of initiation of teaching with research.
With research.
Because these two postdocs were actually helping me do the laboratory work without being in any way appointed by the State of New York. And these were paid by Petroleum Research Fund, and presumably. So, that they were helping me. I just said to connect the pop here and just show the kids how to do this and that. We only have 3 or 4 students. Alright, so now to pursue the question, I'm not just literally following, I know the spirit there, and I'm reading from my vita here.
Right.
Now, having established myself with these two thumbs up, the Indian Dasai and the Japanese Yaranaka, having a very light teaching load, Obama asked me to collaborate with him in three major areas in an ad hoc. There were no appointments of committees or anything. One was to plan for the re-examination of the chemistry building being planned for Sunnybrook. And it's a re-examination because the building had been planned for a science building.
Yeah.
And Donna has a brilliant idea of trying to change some of the specifications to make it more adaptable to chemistry. Since there was already the suggestion that other buildings would be forthcoming for biology and physics and so on and so forth. The second area was the library, in which he asked me to. There was nobody else. It was Don and myself, and the Silverman, and Cook.
When did Reuben Welch come? Do you have any idea?
Reuben Welch was there. Well,
he was there.
Yeah. And I had a great deal of conversation with Reuben Welch in connection with the minimum requirements of chemistry.
Right.
And the third area was recruitment, which was an emergency situation. After recruitment, I invited Sei Tsujishi, who was a colleague of mine at IIT. And I appreciated his technical skill and his personality strength during the 8 months that I was there. So Tsujishi arrived on October 5th of 59. That's moving fast. And he gave a lecture. Remember, the procedure was very simple at that time. The man would arrive, meet with the tour of work, essentially, and then meet three or four people, Frank Eric, Len Eisenbach, Leonard Olson, Lister.
Oh, yes, Bill Lister.
Bill Lister. Those were the ones that stick to my mind, because they were masters at the time. And he would give a lecture, we would meet, Olson would talk to the man, and the rest was out of our hands. So you see, accepted the job. So that was essential, because Tsujishi was one of the best experimentalists that I had come across. I was a pretty good experimentalist myself. So I realized we needed people with hands-on.
Yeah.
No, we didn't want to send directors.
Yeah.
We needed people who really could work with their hands.
Yeah.
Tsujishi was it.
Yeah.
Then we heard of another man, a very able Dutchman called Bill Lenovo, who was rather unhappy at Roman Hand.
Yeah.
We invited him, and on October 19th of 59, Lenovo showed up, gave a lecture. He explained to us what he wanted to do with very high pressure work. And he was giving the work that he accepted the job. So we now have, by November 1st, we have commitments, more or less, you know, because we're talking about October 19th. That these guys were coming. So we had the nucleus. We had Bonner, myself, Tsujishi, and Lenovo. As a personal footnote, it's interesting that the last manuscript that I published at my retirement was a communication to the editor of the American Chemical Society, in which Bill Lenovo was a co-author, because he lent me the equipment on which I did this research. That was equipment on super high pressure. that brought him to my attention originally in 1959. Now, this, I think, has something to do with validity, because it shows some kind of cyclical thinking. In other words, I was attracted to a type of equipment which was rather normal in 59. It was pioneered in industry. I realized the man had great potential. I read one or two articles by him.
By Lenovo?
By Lenovo in industry,
I think.
I don't remember that I actually recruited himself. I think his name was brought to my attention by Darwin. I read that, but I liked this equipment. You know, like an hour later. And the equipment he brought in was grants and so on from industry. He set up a laboratory of high pressure work. So well, so efficient. And now you look at here, a paper number, the last paper from my retirement.
See?
Yeah. Ramirez and Lenovo. October 15th of 85. And I was able to complete a piece of work. I should see me. The piece of work, a very important piece of work. This is a communication to the editor of the Journal of Agriculture. Because of the existence of that equipment that had been sort of planned in 59. Where is that?
Mm-hmm.
You see the coherence of scientific equipment and ideas.